Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zerman. We are back for the second time this week, Kevin. Hello.
We're back because the Phoenix Suns are relevant, and it's fun to have going into the last weekish. Wait, what are we at? Yeah, last week basically, plus a few days of the season.
2 weeks left basically. Yes.
I can't do the math, man. I don't know. Whatever.
It's there will be play-in games happening 2 weeks from today, which is Thursday. Less than 2 weeks. You're on it. Yeah, we're in this really weird spot, Kevin. We're going to talk about the Suns briefly in their last couple of games. You and I both agree there wasn't anything too interesting from them to talk about, but we're each going to focus on one thing and then kind of quickly move on to potential playoff matchups, because the Suns only have 6 games remaining left in the regular season. That is the same for most of their opposition. There are a couple of huge games in the next couple of days that are going to heavily swing some of the odds that we're looking at in terms of the percentages of where these teams could finish. And so on, the wild card, of course, being the Lakers right now, and the potential for them to land at 6 or 7 or even 5. But let's talk about Suns basketball first. I saw some mixed reaction to last night's loss, Kevin. They lost 135-103 to Atlanta. In my opinion, they were due for one of those games like Boston. A lot of people went into that game and predicted it to be like the Boston game, where this is a schedule loss of sorts. To me, it was a mix of that, but it was also the fact that Atlanta just couldn't stop missing. And on the other end, the Suns just didn't have one of their better offensive nights either. So it's one of those things with the identity of their team, where if their defense isn't playing at a high level, they're going to need pretty good offense to not bail themselves out necessarily, but for lack of a better phrase, something along those lines. And they did not get that. That Cleveland game just bizarrely goes to overtime. It just kind of hangs there and sits around in a whatever game. And then they absolutely smash them in overtime. And then they had all those games last week that aren't really that noteworthy. They beat the Clippers, they beat the Jazz, but both those teams were fairly shorthanded. Kevin, you had one thing you were kind of focusing on with the team that I wanted to start with you, and you kind of talked about this last night. The bench has been – there are two main problems right now with the bench, and I think it's an area that we've talked about so much this year that – it's such a strength of the team, but if one of the main three guys isn't what they normally are, then it suddenly really hurts the unit. And it's really noticeable when all three of those guys aren't either consistently producing or one of them isn't playing amazing to kind of carry the bench unit on themselves. They really struggle as a group, and I'll let you go on. There are some struggles right now at the wrong time.
Yeah, and I mean, it matters that Jay Crowder's out. It matters that Dario hardly played last night, and that obviously you're cutting into the ability to mix in your starters more like Book and CP3 and that kind of thing. But I think that one tweet was just like I'm confident in, like, even DA and Mikal and even Cam Johnson to some degree. Like, I'm not the big, we haven't seen these guys in the playoffs before, but I think I'm zeroing in on if this non-playoff experience is going to be a big thing. I think it's going to impact the bench more, and just the whole fact that we've gone through this whole season where they've mostly been really good and there have been games where they take over. But when you get a team that's locked in, if they're able to play a 5-man unit that doesn't have Booker CP3 because of injuries or otherwise, That unit's fairly easy to stop if they're not making buckets. If Dario's banged up, like it appears he still is, if Campaign just isn't hitting his shots, if Cam Johnson's not hitting his shots. So I think that's kind of this is one thing to watch going into the playoffs that I'm not super confident in at the moment. That being said, like, They've had their moments. They've sustained for the most part again through most of a season. So I think the health thing will be a big part of that, getting that back on track.
Yeah, the two guys that I was alluding to were Dario, who only played 12 minutes against Cleveland in the first game of that back-to-back. Kaminsky actually got more minutes than him. He played 16. And then it was straight up that Kaminsky played over him in the Hawks game. Wasn't able to ask Monty if that was injury-related, but I will say that when Dario was missing time or was questionable or probable or whatever with the injury, they were straight up labeling it injury management with his ankle. So I think he would have been on the injury report back with that if it was more of an ankle thing. That stuff's super spotty sometimes, of course, but in my opinion, when Frank played in Atlanta, I just thought that Frank was just getting the nod over Dario, which with Dario's play the last month, 6 weeks, it isn't a difficult choice to make, unfortunately. Because I think that with Dario, obviously the highs are super high, but the lows have been rather low. And unfortunately, Kaminsky has been more consistent. He doesn't give you that high ceiling of when the bench can come in and really just change a game. Now, Frank has had those games for sure, but the level of consistency, especially when we bring up like Dario's net rating and just how much that was coming in at such a high peak of like those plus minuses and the way that they would consistently swing games. We haven't seen that as much from Kaminsky. He'll come in and hit a couple of shots, but he'll also just get looked at a lot in pick and roll coverage, which we saw a lot in the Atlanta game as well. They were picking on him quite a bit.
Yeah, the big man thing's a kind of concern too that I didn't mention, where like if they play the Lakers, if Harrell's going against the second unit and you got to rest DA, just even if Dario's healthy, that's not the best matchup. The Blazers have obviously some like big centers on their team. So, I mean, that's just kind of where the matchup, like losing Damian Jones, I know it's Damian Jones and that's, you don't want to be using him in the playoffs, but
he was there for a reason.
Yeah. And they don't have that guy and I don't know where they would have gotten that guy. So I'm not saying that they screwed up, but that's something to watch.
No, they signed Damian Jones for a specific role with what you were talking about in mind. And then Damian Jones just didn't turn out to be as good as they thought he would be. And then they immediately bailed on him, you know, and got to Frank instead, who is not the stylistic fit that they were looking for, but he's just been better.
Yeah.
And they made the right decision with that for sure. But that's all we're saying with Damian Jones, of course. The other thing it is Cam Johnson. You've probably seen the stats on Twitter if you've been on there the past couple of days. I believe the number is 19% from three on his last like 70 plus attempts over 12 games. Now that did follow a stretch where he was making at least 2 threes in 9 straight games, and then he hit the slump. He broke his nose, and he was listed on the injury report for a couple of games with a right wrist sprain. So obviously that is a factor in the shooting slump and is some of the reason for it, of course. But with that being said, timing not ideal, and he's their first wing off the bench. Even when you go back to Torrey Craig coming off the bench, I would assume when Jay Crowder is back and healthy, Cam's still going to be the first wing off the bench, and they need him to be able to hit shots. And it's going to be a really interesting decision for Monty in a playoff series. If we get to, man, I don't know when too soon would be too soon. Let's say you split the first and second game at game three. He starts out 0 for 3 from three, and he's like 1 of 12 in the series so far. When is the time? Those are the kind of decisions that are actually going to have to be in play somewhat, and is just something that I'm not saying that Cam's going to continue to shoot this poorly for the remaining 6 games of the regular season is going to carry over. But if those sorts of slumps come on for really any of these guys, and we've seen that even with Mikal, where Cam has closed a game over Mikal because Mikal isn't shooting that well that game and Cam is. Those are like the types of decisions that are going to have to come up in the playoffs potentially. And then of course, DeAndre had that straight line that he found for about a month, and now we're kind of more back to the consistent inconsistencies a bit. Monty mentioned, I asked him about the Atlanta game. You guys were tired. Atlanta hit a bunch of shots. You guys didn't really have it going offensively. So like with all those, like that's a pretty simple loss. Can you flush it easier then? And he said, well, no, there are still things we can work on. And then the main thing that he mentioned was that the backline pick and roll defense wasn't there, and it was a step off. And to me, watching DeAndre the past couple of games, I thought that he was back to the defensive play that I was way more critical of in the first 30 to 40 games of the year, when I was saying, and you were disagreeing, that I thought that he had regressed defensively. And I was seeing that a bit more in the past couple of games. I think that he was excellent on the glass in the Atlanta game. and he should have had more offensive rebounds and stuff, but Atlanta did a good job of keying on him in that Clint Capella matchup is no joke. But the Oklahoma City game from kind of from there on, and as well as Utah, it was, I don't know, it's been a rough couple of games. Not a rough couple of games, but a rough couple of games from what, in terms of what we were looking for with him, right, Kevin? It's like you finally found the straight line just at the correct time, right, when they needed it. And he's just straying off just a bit, unfortunately.
Yeah, just a bit. And it's
third-year player.
Been less noticeable and not having those dominant stretches either. So,
yeah, and in one of those games, I believe it was the Cleveland game that I'm thinking of, where he was nuts in the third quarter for like 4 minutes. So it's,
yeah, that's true.
Those games are always, I tweeted this, that they're so wild to watch because he's just being a little bit of the worst of him is kind of showing, and then he can just completely flip it sometimes. And then the next time he comes on the floor, it's the best of him again. It's crazy to see, but just speaks to the type of player that he is. I can't just really think of an adjective at the time. I don't think it exists to really describe him. So
you hope he's young, I guess.
Yeah, young. Inconsistent's obviously the word there, but volatile, I guess, is a word that I've used a ton that I think is the one I was looking for. So the next couple of games coming up, Kevin, they've got the Knicks at home on Friday. I think that the Knicks are a lot better than people think that they are. I think some people are treating them, and I've heard discourse amongst the East and stuff, and like the East is what it is. They're like, oh, they're a good story and everything, but I legitimately think they could win a playoff series and maybe even two. That defense, the way that Julius Randle's been playing, he's very worthy of being in discussion for first-team All-NBA. He's been outstanding this year. And then you got the Lakers on Sunday. I saw that Shams was reporting. It looks like a next week return for LeBron. So next week would indicate Monday or beyond, which would rule him out for Sunday. We'll see if anything more official comes down coming up to the game, which of course it will. But for now, looking like he won't play. But the more important part, Kevin, is the standings, which, going back to the Atlanta game, that's what I wrote about at the end of the recap, is that one of those losses where it just wasn't one of their nights, you can flush it, it's cool, but also you're in the race for a one seed, and the way the Western Conference has been, man, if you just slip up once, all of a sudden you're back to chasing it, and that's what they're doing. The Jazz had another one of those nights where they hit a gazillion threes without their guards, killed the Spurs. Suns are now a game back. The more interesting part, Kevin, is Basketball Reference has these playoff probability reports, is what they call them, and these things can often fluctuate a ton just by one result, and that's something we'll get into. But right now they have the Suns at a 70% chance of landing on the two seed with six games remaining, a 17% chance at the one seed, which they are a game back of. They lead by three games over both teams at the three and the four seed, which is the Clippers and the Nuggets, but they still have it down at an 11% chance with the three seed. Now, I'm guessing if the Suns win one game and the Clippers and Nuggets lose one game, like in that magic number sort of way, those odds will drastically change and pretty much be non-existent. Kevin, I'll make it kind of general for you. When you're looking at the standings, the schedules for the upcoming teams, what stands out to you the most in terms of what to watch for over the next week?
Well, I'm looking at the Lakers schedule, and Suns fans might want to root for them because tonight, it's Thursday. They play the Clippers.
Your classic home road game.
You want the Lakers to win that. Then they play Portland tomorrow, so that's a back-to-back. And you want them to win that, too, because the Lakers actually are pretty close to that seventh seed. Now,
half game off.
They have a pretty easy schedule. Houston, Indiana, New Orleans to close out. They also have Phoenix and the Knicks in there before closing out against those three bad teams. So if AD and LeBron are healthy and playing those last three games just to tune up, they should be good. But you don't want to mess around with them possibly dropping below Portland. And like, you just sent me this link. Thank you very much for that. Playoff probabilities by Basketball Reference. The Lakers are in the sixth seed, but it says they have a 25.6% chance of being the seventh seed. So that's kind of too high to feel good, because if the Suns get the two and they get the seven, yeah, you don't want that.
And those odds, like I said, if they beat the Clippers tonight, I think that their odds for the 6 and the 5 seed are going to go way up, and this odds for the 7 seed are going to go down. But I mean, if they lose that Blazers game, they can fluctuate a ton too. So it's there's a lot of things left. I think something to note about Portland, they've won 5 of their last 6. They played in Cleveland on Wednesday, so they're off tonight, and then they're playing at home. So they were able to fly home, spend home there on Thursday, and then they'll be ready on Friday in Portland still, while the Lakers are flying to the Pacific Northwest to take them on. So it's a very interesting look, because of course you said you should be rooting for the Lakers to beat the Clippers. If the Clippers lose, that takes them sort of out of any sort of last gasp, where if the Suns kind of stumble at the end of this regular season, the Clippers still wouldn't be able to make a run at the 2 seed perhaps. And I think that's really what it comes down to, Kevin, because Dallas is at the 5 seed, but they're 10.5 games out, like the Lakers, a half game away from the Blazers at the 7 seed. We're pretty much at the point where we can rule out Memphis, Golden State, San Antonio to make any sort of run right there. Basketball Reference right now, in fact, has Golden State at a 20% chance to get the 7 seed and a 27.2% chance for Memphis. So they're not quite there yet. They still think that there's a decent chance that they can make a run at the 7. But in terms of the 6 seed, I believe they're mathematically like eliminated from it for however reason that is. But for the Lakers, the crazy thing is right now it's they're at a 30.8% chance for the 7 seed and a 16.7% chance for the 8 seed. So there's nearly a 50% chance. Actually, that's the Blazers. I'm sorry. There's nearly a 50% chance of the Blazers being at 7 or 8. So if the Suns land at 1 or 2, there's a decent chance that they're taking on Portland. I don't really have much else to add, Kevin, just because we're going to know, like I'm saying, we're going to know so much more after this weekend that when we podcast at the start of next week, especially after the Suns play the Lakers. We forgot to mention that part, Kevin.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about potential hijinks?
No. No, let's just...
No? Okay. I'm just like, if the Lakers lose both of these games in the back-to-back, but it's still feasible that they could get to the 6 or the 5.
Yeah.
Let's not touch it. Okay. Let's not touch it. I agree. But
you're saying rest book, rest Chris, lose.
Yeah. We haven't rested guys literally all year, but now we're going to rest like 4 guys. Correct.
Okay. That would be funny. Get Sticks out there. Get him some run.
I'm mainly laughing. We're not suggesting anything serious, of course. But I'm saying if it looks like the Lakers are a full game out, like they're at the 7th seed, they're a full game out of the 6th seed or whatever, and the Suns are looking at something where they could very well be in a 2-7 where they're playing them, they could help themselves out with the Lakers by giving them a win.
That would also just be like, you're not scouting us one more time.
That could be the angle.
Like Chris Paul, Monty would be like, we could just not do it. Chris, can you rest one game? Just one game.
Yeah, well, God, this back-to-back for the Lakers is huge. It's really big. So we'll see how much.
For then, yeah.
It might not matter, exactly. It might go into Sunday's game, and the notion of that is just kind of silly. But we'll see, man.
We'll get to that point if it happens.
Which we won't be on this podcast, so that's kind of why I wanted to mention it. Is there any change for you to kind of wrap up here in the last couple of weeks in terms of who you are the most afraid of? There is a growing, I don't want to say it's the narrative, but one of the narratives right now, of course, is that are the Lakers not going to be healthy enough in time? Are the Lakers running out of time, period, to like get themselves healthy and get themselves sorted? I still have the Lakers in their own tier in terms of who I would not want to play against. LeBron James has 9 less career playoff games than the entire Suns roster combined. It's LeBron James and then Anthony Davis, who is just coming off of a postseason where he was the best player in the league, basically during that entire postseason run in the finals, had a I'm the best player on the planet kind of series. So I do not want to see that team that also has the best defensive rating in the NBA, which no one talks about a lot for some reason with them. So that's, yeah. I've kind of answered my own question for myself, but are you leaning more closely towards, I'm just as scared of the Clippers, or even more so?
No, I don't want to mess with the Lakers. Like, LeBron could come back tomorrow without a practice, and I would rather play the Blazers, the Grizzlies, the Mavericks, probably the Nuggets. In the first round, maybe the Clippers, you could argue, but they're not going to play them anyway, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, I mean, that's another weird discussion point, is like, would the Suns rather play the Lakers getting into it in the first round? But that's obviously, they're not going to even have that conversation. But that's an interesting thing. Like, I'd rather play them in a first round in one way, where I'd rather hope that they're not quite clicking. But I also don't think that you'd want to play them at all anyway. So I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's a weird conversation, because I can make the opposite point. Well, if they're injured, don't you want to play them after two playoff series? You know what I mean? So they're even more worn down if they're worn down. It's,
yeah, but
semantics of sorts.
But if they get a series or two in, that means they're probably not struggling. And it probably
they're just
getting back into shape.
Is the Michael Porter Jr. might be a star right now thing enough for you to look at the Nuggets as anything less than the team you would most want to play in the second round, or is that still the case?
I never really shut them out. I think I'm
in terms of them, though, like, you would definitively want to play them in a series over the Jazz, Clippers, and Lakers. I think that's more my question.
Man, I would feel better against the Jazz, maybe, almost.
Wow.
Their defense isn't that good, right?
They've been kind of middle of the road for the rest of the season, but ever since Jamal got hurt, they've just been flying around on that end. They look like a different team of sorts, but as of what I was seeing last night and this morning, there's no PJ Dozier news, but I believe Mike Malone said last night that it's looking like he's not going to be with us for a while. And PJ Dozier was the only guard that they had outside of Campazzo, who was basically healthy, that's been with them. Now they're going to Austin Rivers and Shaq Harrison midseason acquisitions. They're still waiting to get Monte Morris back. But again, like, there's no scoring there at all, no creation. So I lean there. I'm with you that, like, I would maybe talk about the Jazz in a certain way, but I think that DeAndre's done such a good job with the Jokic matchup recently that he would be able to not neutralize him by any means, but hold his own enough to where Jokic couldn't single-handedly dominate the series. I think Aiden would be enough of a factor to prevent that.
He's important. You don't need to send doubles. You just let him go on an island and hope he forces a miss, or Jokic just has to, like, actually play 5-on-5 basketball.
We're almost there, buddy. I believe it is the play-ins start on the 18th. I believe it's the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st, and the playoffs start the 22nd, which would be, I believe, 2 weeks from – I can't do math in my head well enough, but basically 2 weekends from this weekend, we will be in the heat of playoff basketball, and we'll be able to start to preview stuff and get down to it a little bit more. We'll be back next week to kind of focus on what we were mostly just talking about, because I don't know if there's going to be enough to really break down from this game. I think that some of the inconsistent players that we talked about, them finding more consistency here as the season wraps up, is going to be good. But, I mean, the rest of that week, by the way, I didn't even say Golden State on Tuesday and Portland on Thursday, two teams who have a ton to play for. And then depending on how these next, again, in terms of how much we're going to know by next week, Kevin, how about San Antonio? Because you've got a back-to-back in San Antonio to end the year against them. And right now they are on the 10 seed. And wouldn't you know it, the New Orleans Pelicans are a game and a half out. Ooh. Because the Spurs have lost 5 in a row. And wouldn't you know it, Kevin, 2.5 back, the surging Sacramento Kings. They won't die, Kevin. They've won 4 in a row. Here they come. So if this next, like, couple of days or couple of games keeps going in that direction, San Antonio could be playing for just a play-in spot in general in those games, which would just be massive for them. And then the Suns could have seeding implications that they could want in a certain way. So those could actually be really, strangely, really big games, which, again, for all this talk about the play-in kind of sucking, this is why it's so awesome and why I hope it's continues to come back, because it makes these games relevant as we go back to that word.
Relevant. Yep.
I love it. I love seeing the Washington Wizards kind of be a low-key scary playoff matchup for some teams, just like playing against Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal, finding some form in the Eastern Conference, Kevin. Storylines everywhere.
Hey, I like the shortened season. I think that's good. I like the plan. Let's do it every year. Yes.
I like the shortened season, but the schedule kind of stretched out a bit more. Keep it at 72 games, but give these guys less. Monty said it last night. He was saying East Coast, but I'm pretty sure what he was trying to say was the opposite coast. He said he couldn't remember having this many back to backs on the opposite coast, which you're not supposed to do, and for obvious reasons. But they've had a couple this year, and he said he couldn't remember ever doing that before in a season. He's been around quite a long time, Kevin, so he's seen a lot. All right, we'll be back next week, everyone. A lot to recap, and we'll see what these standings look like. I think they're going to look pretty different and a lot more definitive. We'll be back then. Goodbye.